So in rabbinic times, a woman approaches Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, a Roman woman, and says, "It's true, I understand, that your God created the world in 6 days." Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta says, "Yes, that's true." And she says, "Well, what has God been doing since then?" And he says, "God has been matching up men and women." And she said, "You don't need God for that. I can do that." He said, "Really? Try it." So she does. She goes out into the marketplace and she goes, "You with you, you with you, and you with you." She comes back the next day and every couple that she has matched up is fighting. They're throwing things at each other. They're yelling at each other. She goes to Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. She goes, "You were right. Not so easy." And he says, "Yes, we learn in our tradition that it was easier for God to split the sea than it was for him to make a good match." I thought about this midrash when I read an article by the biblical scholar James Diamond recently about love in the Torah. And he points out something that every reader of the Torah knows, but we don't usually consider it, which is that love in the Torah doesn't work very well. It starts off with Adam and Eve. Their relationship led them to get kicked out of paradise. But it's not only love between men and women. Love between parents and children and love between siblings, none of it works well. Who were the first siblings? Cain and Abel. Did not work well, since Cain murdered his brother. We read this morning about Joseph, and I'll come back to Joseph in a second. But you know, it didn't work well with his brothers either. They were going to kill him, and then they compromised on just selling him off to Egypt. But think about Abraham and Sarah. Not only does he twice pass his wife off as his sister to save her life, but still, not nice, not appreciated. But they have two kids. One of them, Ishmael, he kicks out of the house. The other one, and by the way, they don't have two kids, needless to say, obviously. It's Sarah's handmaiden that has a kid with Abraham. I don't even want to go into that. The other one, Isaac, he takes up to the mountain to slaughter. This is not a successful family. And Isaac has two kids, Jacob and Esau. His wife, and this may indicate some trouble in the relationship, counsels Jacob on how to fool his old blind father and steal the blessing from his brother Esau, who then swears he will kill his brother. And by the way, Jacob, the one who ran away and didn't get killed, he's the father of Joseph, the one who gets sold into slavery by his brothers. It goes on and on and on. If you read between the lines, Moshe and Zipporah did not have a very successful marriage. Among other things, can you imagine being Moses' wife? He's always up on mountains. Talking to Pharaoh in the palace, he's never home at night. And Moses' sons do not follow him into leadership. And Aaron's sons, two of them, are killed by God. Over and over and over. Moses, after all, has two siblings. I could keep going. Aaron and Miriam. God punishes them because they gossip about Moses. Everywhere you turn to see love in the Torah, you also see a problem. Even in Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Songs, which is the paradigm of love in the Tanakh, in the Bible, even there, Diamond shows through careful analysis that there's a lot of resistance, there's a lot of friction, that, as the poet put it centuries after the Bible, the course of true love never did run smooth. So what's the point? Why does the Torah give us example after example after example of love that is tortured, that is painful, that is difficult. There's only one instance, by the way, in the entire Tanakh of it explicitly saying that a woman loves a man, and that's Michal and David. David, who, by the way, had his own problems with women, including falling in love with Bathsheba while she was married, sending her husband off to war so that he would get killed because Bathsheba was pregnant with David's child. But let's leave that one aside for a moment, because you don't have all day. But earlier than that, Michal says that she loves David, but later on, she gets upset when David is dancing in the streets, having recovered the Torah from the Philistines, because she thinks it's undignified for the king of Israel to dance. She mentions that to him. He's not happy about it. And it says, from that day on, she never had a child. You can understand what the Torah is really telling you. Right? The palace was big. They had separate bedrooms. Doesn't say that, but I'm guessing. Archaeology has not yet reached the stage where we have unearthed Michal's bedroom, but give them time. They're very clever. So what is the point of this parade of dysfunction that is the Torah? Diamond's answer is a very interesting one, although I actually am not entirely happy with it. He says what the Torah is trying to tell you is love between human beings will always be a problem. That's what it means to love another person. It's difficult enough. The English writer Iris Murdoch gave a wonderful definition of love. I recommend it to you. She said, love is the extremely difficult realization that someone else is real. Think about that. It's when you actually realize that the other person is real, that's love. As opposed to just a projection of yourself. And Diamond says, because love between human beings is so problematic, so difficult, the Torah is trying to tell you that the only really pure, successful love is love of God. But the reason I'm not happy with that answer is, first of all, love of God doesn't work so well in the Torah either. Presumably, God and the Israelites love one another, but they're fighting all the time. Because as long as a human being is involved in any part of the transaction, you're going to get difficulty. Love a person, love God, love yourself, it's always going to be a problem. So what's the lesson? That's the lesson. That's the lesson. In one of his short stories, the postmodernist writer John Barth says the moral of the story is the key to the treasure is the treasure. In other words, once you understand what it is, that in and of itself is what you're searching for. You're searching for the meaning to unlock it. And the meaning of unlocking love is exactly what the Torah says. It is not to expect a frictionless love. And that is particularly important, I think, in our day, because we are fed this steady diet of love that has some obstacle in the middle of the movie, but once it overcomes the obstacle, everything is fine. So yes, you know, somewhere along the line, there's going to be a difficulty, there's going to be a breakup, there's going to be a problem, parents are going to get upset at children, children are going to run away from home about parents, but sooner or later, everybody comes together at the end of the movie, the credits roll, and life is good. But that's not true in the Torah. There is no happily ever after in the Torah. Not only between human beings, but between God and Israel. After all, when the Israelites take over the land of Israel, everything isn't perfect and fine. The lesson of the Torah is the lesson of breaking the glass at the end of the wedding, which is, This is a beautiful moment. Wait. Wait. When the child is born, he or she will seem perfect. Wait. Wait till you get them in the middle of the rabbi's sermon. They're going to scream, and he's going to stare at you. You're going to feel bad because of that child who seems so perfect right now. The point is that every kind of love, even between friends, Jonathan and David's love, as beautiful and as perfect as it is in the Torah, has all sorts of complications because Jonathan's father doesn't like David. There's always a problem. There's always a difficulty. There's always friction. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But whatever the relationship, it's not going to be easy, or it's not love. Our relationship with strangers is easy. Our relationship with acquaintances is sometimes beautiful and pure. But you want to hear an amazing midrash about Yosef, about Joseph? Remember, Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers. Then he goes to Egypt, and Potiphar's wife has a crush on him, tries to get him to sleep with her, and when he refuses, she says, "He tried to force me." And so he ends up getting thrown into prison. And the rabbis say later in his life, someone said to Joseph, "I love you, Joseph." And he said, "Don't love me. Love has brought me nothing but pain." It's a remarkable thing. But it's an acknowledgement of the rabbis that there is no unambiguous, unambivalent emotion. And that is a difficult life lesson, but an inevitable one. So let me close with a beautiful rabbinic story about love that embodies both. You know, there is a law that's never, ever observed. In all of Jewish history, it's never been observed. That if you marry someone and for 10 years you don't have a child, then you should divorce them and marry someone else so that you can have children. We know that even the most observant people don't follow this law, because there are some famous childless marriages in Jewish history, including, by the way, the Lubavitch Rebbe, and yet nobody ever divorces because of this law. But nonetheless, I have to give you this law because it's the background of a beautiful story in the Midrash. So the rabbis say, once there was a king and a queen, and they loved each other very much, but 10 years passed, and despite their best efforts, they couldn't have children. So the king came to his queen and he said, "I love you, but there's nothing I can do. The law is the law. So I have to divorce you, but I love you so much that I want you to know anything I have is yours. So I'm going to sleep tonight, and anything in the palace you want, any jewels, any servants, anything you want, take with you. But I can't bear to say goodbye, so I'm going to sleep. When I wake up, I know that you will be gone, and I wish you well." She goes to sleep. And he wakes up the next morning, and he discovers that the only thing she took from the palace was the bed that he was sleeping on. And they lived, presumably, happily and unhappily, ever after. But the message of the Midrash is that love requires carrying heavy things. Dedication, determination, and work, no matter what the love is. Man, woman, parent, child, friend, family. It's always true. We're coming up on Hanukkah. You know, I love to quote that line from Kathy Landsman, the comedian. She says, "Holidays are a chance to renew your resentments afresh." Right? You haven't seen your family for a while. You forgot what Uncle So-and-so does. He comes over for Hanukkah, and you go, "Oh, yeah, that's why we don't invite him over for Shabbos." But that's love. Difficult, frictionful, hard, indispensable. So the message of the Torah is, love will never be as easy as you want, But a life without love, as we see, is not possible or desirable to live. So again and again and again, the hearers of the Torah mess it up, and yet, like us, they still keep the people in their lives whom they love. A hard lesson, but a good one, and one I think we need to relearn every day. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.